Hey, everybody, welcome back to Little Things or Big Things Education Podcast with T-Free and K-Dub. We're excited to have you back here as we dive deeper into our big idea around fear of looking stupid. And we're going to discuss some of the ideas of like when we feel like we don't know what we're doing, we can feel like we're stupid or we're not good enough. And that almost like freezes us from even trying. So recognizing that. And then this idea of like being different versus being stupid and how that can show up the same way. And then we're going to talk about a whole bunch of different ways that this can show up for you. And I'll finish out with a little bit of a personal story for you as we get into story time. So let's get started into this week's big idea.
All right, he's coming to you live from Bowling Green, Kentucky, where he's got all the energy of his four Goldens. Bunch of years in Challenge Day, teaching and tutoring all at the same time. He does it all at once and makes it look easy. T-Free, my best friend and a great teacher.
Ayo, it's not easy making it look easy. K-Dub's coming to you live from the Pacific Northwest. He's got 11 years of teaching middle school and high school social studies, 20 years plus of coaching pretty much every sport known to the human race, plus his dog and made-up fun games. My best friend, K-Dub.
Yes, yes, all the made-up fun games with the dog.
That's where our creativity really gets to shine, though. You know, like that's where improv, I think, starts for you and I, is creative games for our dogs.
Yes, and or pretending to talk for our dogs, which while we're pretending to talk for our dogs, if you could have them rate and review us so that we could get more subscriptions and more likes, that would help us out a great deal. We would love to get those 5 stars. We are available on Little Things or Big Things Education, on Pete Steak Mathematics, or on littlebiged.com, and wherever else you get your podcasts.
And if you want to follow us on social media with your dog links and accounts, that would be wonderful too. We love dogs.
Yes. Even cats are okay. Dogs are better.
Cats are all right. I'm just allergic to them, but they still love me. And as long as I can breathe later in the day, like it's all good.
Excellent. Our topic this week is the fear of looking stupid, which we are obviously both avoiding in the moment as we talk about dogs on our podcast about education. Tim, do you want to get started with this one? I know that you are super passionate about the fear that kids have of looking stupid in the classroom.
Well, and I didn't really intend to do it because it's kind of become like a default mode for me. But like, that's like my default, right? Is like, I'm just going to be really goofy because then I don't think I look stupid because I'm like, no, like that's just who I am. Like, deal with it, right? And what's funny though is like that's something that I developed. And I do remember like growing up, that I was very shy and quiet and reserved. And like, I don't know how much of this on the psychology side is true, but as like a middle child, like I felt like my older brother was like plowing the way, right? And was kind of like, he's going to go explore the landscape and figure stuff out. I'm going to try to learn from his mistakes and the boundaries he set by mom and dad, right? And then my little brother is like, I'm going to get away with everything because I'm the baby, right? Like typical middle child syndrome. That's how I believe the world is. And so I just sat like quiet in the middle. And like, I remember this for whatever reason, right? Like we attach certain meanings to things, but like in high school, I think it was sophomore year, maybe it was junior year, but like I had kind of really grown into like this loud, boisterous character. Like everybody love me because like I don't really love myself yet. But if I make you laugh, like now I feel accepted and like a part of your party, right? And so like I started early, I know in high school, of like hollering down the hallways at people and be like, I don't know you, but what's up? You know, and like I remember my parents saw that and they were like, wait. You're like loud and you're outgoing. Like who are you? Like, who's this child who's been like silent at home and like really quiet and like tries to like not get in trouble and like lets both brothers just wreck chaos. And then it's like, no, like at high school, I'm like this different human, like entirely for all sorts of different reasons I'm discovering as I continue to like do my own personal growth. Right. But like, I think it's so interesting the ways that we try to mold and adapt so that we don't look stupid in different settings. And that personality can be so different, right? Like, I didn't want to rock the boat at home, so I was very quiet and I just followed the rules. I didn't want to like stand out and be like left alone at school, so I was loud and drew attention to myself so that like I felt like love and acceptance came because I made people laugh, you know, like like two completely different humans. That was like all part of who I am, but like I let those things shine because I thought that's who I was supposed to be in those moments, right?
Well, yeah, not to like take the dog metaphor too far, and I know we joke in the intro that you've got all the energy of a golden retriever or a lab, but that, I mean, it does kind of describe you, right? You're like this loud, boisterous, really fun to be around person. And then when you get the appropriate space, you then take a nap and you chill out when you're done being loud and boisterous. I think one of the things that I find really interesting about like our friendship and not like whatever, not like an opposite to track, but like your response to not wanting to stand out in a way that made you feel uncomfortable was to like kind of own the room and kind of like take over the space. And I have traditionally been more of the person who I'll enter into a space and I have my realm of what I feel comfortable with, but I'm going to kind of like survey the lay of the land and spend some time kind of getting a feel for things. And then I'll kind of try and like take the part of me that fits into what seems to be the expected norm in the space that I'm in. And then what's really hard sometimes as I get older is that like as I've gotten more patient, because in some ways I've learned not to like start putting my hand up and be like, oh, this is who I am now. But like, I'm in year four at a building now, right? Now I'm finally putting my neck out and putting my foot out and being like, hey, like I've observed how things are here and it sucks and it needs to change. Right. And so like really actually being myself in that space. And as I think about that, I circle back to the idea. I know when we talked about doing this topic for the podcast, one of the things that we both thought a lot about was how many of our students that this looks different for, right? Like the idea of being afraid to look stupid, the behavior looks different for almost every single one of our kids, right? Like it's different for you and I, and it's different for most of the kids in our classroom. And for a lot of our kids, some version of that looks like not even trying to do anything, right? Like just like totally, totally, like way more than even I would, laying in the background and trying to kind of go unnoticed, or to try and have a particular thing go unnoticed, right? Like, I'm not good at math and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that goes unnoticed.
Right. Yeah. And I think what's awesome about both of our experiences and how we showed up in high school and how that helps us connect with our students now is like with our friendship and like knowing each other, like we've had experiences on like, how do I identify that this might actually be a student trying to fit in or trying to not stand out and look, you know, like they don't know what they're doing. And when I get a student who goes into that, like not gonna try mode, like there's two things for me that I kind of immediately go to. One, is it that you have so much other crap going on in your life that this is your space to like just chill? And so like that's got to be the conversation that I eventually like work in and connect with. Or is it like you have not been able to pass a math class in 8 years? Everyone's told you you're terrible at it. And when you show up in my class, the last thing you want to do is be reminded that you're not good at math. And so trying to quickly identify that actually is the goal, right? Like they don't want to look stupid. They're sick and tired of feeling like they're no good at it, or they're not good enough at it at least. And then trying to build those low barrier to entries we've talked about, trying to bring them in, trying to make it relatable, trying to work on the things they have had success with and celebrate those victories and actually, you know, like put them up on the podium a little bit and like be like, oh, like look how good you are. Mm-hmm. And like in a genuine way.
Well, yeah, just hearing you tell that story, I was thinking about like my own math experience and how, you know, we talked last week about like the idea of like it becoming personal, and like you, like we both just used that language of like, I'm bad at math for students. And that was like, is like my self-perception is like, I am bad at math. I cannot do math. unless it has to do with like sevens, because I need to keep track of touchdown scores. But like otherwise, I'm going to struggle. And so I'm thinking about like my best experience in math in high school was legitimately my strategy eventually became avoidance, right? Like that was eventually the default strategy I had for like the fear of looking stupid. So when I got to, I'm pretty sure it was my senior year, and I think I've told part of this story before already on the podcast, so we'll keep it short. I'm pretty sure it was senior year. I finally got to advanced algebra trig because I had to take like the intermediate integrated 1.5 sophomore year. So I get to senior year, I'm in whatever trig or whatever that class was. And I think, I know you've heard this story, right? I don't remember what day it was. We started talking about matrices in class. Right. And I remember being in class for 50 minutes and literally having, like, he might as well have been up there speaking in Mandarin. Like, I had no idea what the hell was going on. And so, like, my strategy that kicked in was, like, I'm just not going to be here, right? Like, I cannot be in this space. And so I went with avoidance strategy, started skipping class, eventually felt ashamed, and came back to try and talk to the teacher. And, that, like, it's telling that, like, my favorite math teacher, other than Mr. Whitmore, is that math teacher who told me it was okay for me to stop showing up. Right, like he basically said, like, avoidance is the appropriate strategy for you based on this conversation that we're having. I'm going to give you a C. You feel free to keep skipping my class. So I'm not going to name his name so nobody gets in trouble. But, like, right. I literally was given a C to stop showing up so that he didn't have to deal with trying to figure out how to solve my sticky widget issues. And I didn't have to be put in a place where I was, like, feeling like he, like, to his credit, like, he noticed like the absolute level of discomfort that it would take for a student who was college bound to just stop going to a class.
Yeah. The thing that jumps to me immediately, and I don't know if this is true, but like it's the thing that my brain went to, is like he met your avoidance strategy with avoidance, right? Yes. Like he's like, oh, you don't want to come to class because you don't want to do math. I don't want to deal with trying to get a kid that doesn't want to do math. So just don't come to my class. Like, that's fine. Here's your C. Neither of us have to deal with it anymore.
Like, yes. Which is so.
I think that's hilarious.
It is hilarious. And I want to be very clear. I'm not advising that anybody else do that.
No.
As a teacher. And so, like, for me, what I think about when you're talking about, like, taking the time for figuring out, like, what's the reason behind that with a kid, right? And I don't know what the right answer would have been for me by the time, you know, you're a senior in advanced algebra trig and whatever. Like, I don't honestly know what I would have wanted him to do. I haven't thought a whole lot about it. I don't know what I would have wanted him to do differently in that case. But like for me with my students, right, what the process I try and go through is, what is, like, we've been talking, like, all of these topics have been circulating around the idea of motivation, right? What is the thing that is stopping you from trying, right? Where is the lack of motivation coming from? And if I am able to identify that you are afraid of looking stupid in this space, what is it that you think is going to make you look stupid is like the obvious next question. And then how do we put some things together in the classroom so that you don't have to worry about that anymore? And one thing that I think you do way better than I do is establish a culture from day one where kids can openly make mistakes and not worry about it. And I'm assuming that that's part of this, right? Like that's something that you've thought about as it relates to not wanting your kids to worry about looking stupid.
Oh, 100%, right? And like usually if it gets to a point where like there's a weird, awkward vibe that still somehow gets developed, even though like I've tried to build the opposite, like again, it's my personality, so this isn't going to be a fix all for everybody. But like I will go 100% weirder with it. I'm like, I will look more stupid than anybody else in the room could possibly look, so that you can try, because I just made a complete fool of myself for like however it is. And like, and again, it's got to be, it can't be like a stage thing where the kids are like, you just did that crap, like knock it off, like you and your little like dog and pony show, like get out of here, Freeberg, right? No, it's it's like I'm gonna go do something ridiculous that I normally wouldn't have tried, like, and maybe it's mental math, like I do mental math all the time up on the board, but there are certain things that I'll still look at and be like, nope, I'm not going to try that. I'm going to pull out the calculator because I don't want to look stupid. Mm-hmm. But if there are moments where like I need to reassure everybody that it's okay to like fall flat on your face and not even be remotely close to what the right answer is, like I'll look at something where it's like a four-step equation and I try to do it all in my head and I'm like, all right, somebody else throw that in the calculator. Tell me if I was anywhere close. And like I'm in the realm, right? Like I'm not like so far off that people are like, you weren't even doing the right problem. But like I am so far off that people are like, wow, dude, like you're normally closer than that. What happened? And it's like, I make mistakes. I'm having an off day, you know? And like, I own it and try to make the, again, it's the making the mistakes and failings part of learning piece, but like to make that safe so that stupid is not attached to failure or stupid is not attached to learning. Right. And so, we attach that label and it has so much meaning to it of like, I'm not able to do this. And instead of saying, I haven't learned this yet, it's I can't do this. I'll never be able to do this because I'm stupid. Like that's the issue. And like, yeah, I'm going to try my darndest to make sure nobody's like, I'm so stupid. Right. And it's like, it's okay if we're like, oh, that was so dumb. Right. Or like, I'm stupid in this moment, but it's not like, as soon as we like legit, like attach, like this is who I am because of my mistake or my struggle. Like that's what I need to, me as a personal teacher, like I have to break that. Like that's just a personal, like I must.
Well, and one of the things that I think about the way that we're talking about this and the language that you're using there around like the meaning that gets attached to it. The reason that I think this is the hardest one to combat, like we talked about perfectionism and trying to combat that. We talked about like just trying to motivate the unmotivated student the week before that even. The reason that the fear of looking stupid, at least for me, I find to be like the stickiest widget to unstick is like, that is language that I never use, right? The word stupid never comes up in my classroom, right? Like I just don't use that word. And it's semi-intentional. And it's also just like, I think stupid has become a word that lacks meaning because it has too many different meanings. And I'm a real big believer in precision of language, but like, that is something that is very much personal to the student, and it's something that they have decided without really telling anybody in most cases. And so the reason I find it so difficult is like, it's really hard for me to predict that that's where we're coming from. Like I used to attach the fear of looking stupid with like the perfectionism thing that we talked about last week. And where that used to come up a lot was, again, right, trying to do the different version of the project. Well, I'm not going to do the podcast because I'm going to look stupid if I try and do a podcast instead of just doing the same essay that everybody else is doing. But what I found is that, right, that is usually more of a perfectionism issue, but you'll have the same barrier or the same subject of like, hey, how are we going to communicate our learning this time? But the barrier, the reason they don't want to do the podcast or the reason they don't want to do the movie trailer is because everybody else in that space has taken the safe choice and they're just going to write the essay, right? They're going to do the thing that they've done before. And your fear of looking stupid is attached to the idea that, well, I'm putting myself out there by trying something different. And for me, that's where I'm finding some success with the fear of looking stupid thing is when the fear of stupid is around stupid meaning different, right? I feel like I have much more success combating that. How do you feel about like that difference between fear of looking stupid because I couldn't do the schoolwork versus fear of looking stupid because I'm different than the other people in the room right now in this moment?
For me, I think in math specifically, there's the story that has been attached to a lot of my students that are like, I'm just no good at it, right? And so a lot of times the I'm no good at it or I'm not good enough turns into the like, I'm actually stupid. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I've got my friends who are good at math, especially if you get that dynamic. Right. So like I've got, again, I'm going to reference sports because I see it in my coaching field all the time. I've got these athletes that all hang out together and you get a couple of these kids that are really good at math and a bunch of the ones that hate math or have not been successful at it in the past. And they're like, oh yeah, they're so smart. We're just stupid because we don't understand math. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's that piece of it. I do think the not fitting in part is very prevalent right now. And it also, when you were talking about the avoidance piece and like you checking out and like skipping class, made me think about how easy it is for students in my class. They don't have to physically skip, but they emotionally and mentally skip all the time, right? And like they'll throw their headphones in and they'll be in a different world. Or even if I've gotten them to put out their headphones and put their phone in their pocket, you know, they're doodling on a sketch pad, or they have their Chromebook up and they've got their, you know, the form they're supposed to be working on up, and then three other tabs where they're playing video games or talking or, you know, doing something to distract and avoid this feeling of stupid or standing out or not fitting in. And so they would much rather look funny than look like they don't know what they're doing. And I think that part ties directly into the not fitting in part, because I think at that moment it's less about I don't know how to do math, but it's more about I need to make sure I still have friends at the end of the day.
Yeah. And that's why in our connection activity, even though it's like the fear of looking stupid week, I really focus on like the fear of looking different and creating a space where kids can feel comfortable being who they are and like outwardly being who they are, right? Like not being hidden in who they are and retracted in who they are. And I will say quickly, because I know it's a pet peeve of probably every teacher on the planet right now, it took me until really this year coming back to hybrid in-person learning, and maybe a little bit last year as I was getting better at it, to not take seeing a cell phone out as like a personal like FU or slight, and just realizing, oh, that's an avoidance strategy. Like that kid feels completely at a loss for what we're supposed to be doing right now. And rather than even giving in an attempt, they're just going to, right? It's the ultimate avoidance strategy. And it's because it's also completely socially acceptable among their peer group to just disengage and be on your phone, right? Like that, that's not saying I'm not capable or anything. It's just saying like, oh, I'd rather be on my phone. Wouldn't we all rather be on our phones right now? Kind of moment. And so I've gotten, especially with the hybrid thing, like, of understanding like, oh, if a kid's got their cell phone out when they're coming to hybrid learning and they've been on Zoom class for over a year, that means that they're like actively avoiding trying to do the thing that we're doing right now. So like with all of that and the avoidance and the different thing, one of the things that I really wanted to point to, and I think that you're going to agree with me, but I haven't run this by you, so I'm interested to get your take on it, is that it has almost nothing to do with you. And what I mean about that, right, it's not about you connecting with the student about the thing that they're passionate, right? It's not your job to be all things to all students, right? Like you don't have to be the guy who understands anime in order for the student who likes anime to feel comfortable in your classroom. It's not about you. It is about the space that you create so that the kid who does care about anime can find the other person in the classroom that has that interest, where the kid who's interested in the Holocaust can like connect with the other kid who actually wants to learn about this topic, not just because they're being told to, but because it's actually making an impact on how they're viewing the world, right? Like you want to create a space where kids feel safe enough, I think is the best word to use. Confident might be another word to use, where they can express that interest or that passion and know that it's not going to be, A, the teacher's not going to hammer it down, right? That's the obvious thing. But that you've created a space where like also other students are going to kind of just look up. They might notice it. And if it's not their thing, they're going to ignore it and let you go do your thing with the other people that have that thing.
Yeah.
Does that compute to you? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I don't know why, but like I had like this thought and like this piece of me that was like, wait, stop listening to respond and listen to listen. And then like I got soaked into you for a moment, and then all of a sudden my like response disappeared, but I just felt it again. No, like the thing I was going to talk about, because you spoke to it early and I thought it was so interesting. You're like, I'm going to run this by you. And then you spoke to this idea of like in this like relationship building space, that we, oh my gosh, why is my brain's literally like disappearing on me in like spots right now. I listened to a podcast the other day that was talking about, That's what it was. Our relationships right now are starting to shift to this idea that one person needs to be everything. And so when you were talking about this idea of you don't have to be everything for every student, that's where my brain went. And then I was like, wait, don't listen to Respond. Actually listen to all the other things he's talking about. But this idea that like we used to be a community, right? Like the whole group would help raise the family. The whole group would help hunt and gather and provide. Like we were like a very social, like we relied on everybody to do their part. And we've slowly gotten into more self-reliant, smaller pods, right? And it's like I can live on my own because I can make money. I can, you know, basically create a child by myself almost at this point, right? You know, like with some science enhancements and all that kind of stuff, right? And like I don't need the other parts, so to speak. And when we do start to find like these partners, we want it to be this, or relationships in general, like we want that person to fill all the needs we have. And so we've been doing it by ourselves for so long. And now all of a sudden we're like, no, this person is going to provide all of this for me. And so it's an interesting dynamic. And the conversation was going along the lines of like, we have too many expectations for our partners and our relationships. And I think us teachers do that a lot too with our relationship with the students. Like we have to have all the answers and we don't. Like we need to have our relationships with our coworkers and our counseling teams and like all these things so that we can help provide that best fit. But yeah, no, all the things you were talking about totally make sense. And like my brain immediately had disappeared to that idea of like, we don't have to be everything for everybody.
Well, and I'm glad that you circled back to that, because when you were talking, one of the things that reminded me of is like in that sense of like, I don't have to be all things for everybody. You're talking about like how things have changed. That has been one of the things I've tried to grow the most in, but I've struggled the most with during COVID, like just talking about my own personal teaching practice, because there is so much, for me, fear is the right word, of like, well, what if I'm the only adult that they come into contact with today that they feel like they have some sort of connection to, or who's giving them the space to do X, Y, or Z, and really feeling like all of that is like that I am responsible for all of that in a way that I was getting better at not doing. And yeah, I've kind of fallen back into that a little bit during the remote teaching standpoint. And I think that's, you know, it's not just, you know, I can say that in the space of like with the student interest thing, but that is also true for just like, you know, kids like different teaching styles, right? Like I'm not going to be able to, I think that's the biggest mistake I've tried to make, is I keep trying to be like multiple styles of teacher on Zoom, which is not something I've worried about in the past, right? Like I've obviously tried to do things that work for different types of learners, but still be myself all the time. And I think every once in a while with the remote learning, I'm trying too hard to be multiple people, which obviously doesn't work. So.
Right. And that's such a difficult trap. Like most of us will fall in at some point is, oh my gosh, like I just heard this amazing thing. I'm going to go be that. And yes, like exactly what you said is the idea of like bring great content from different perspectives for different learning styles, but you still got to put like your twist on it. You still got to be you. And yeah, again, don't take it personal when you are not the best teacher for that individual student.
Yeah.
And like, I know that would be almost a near impossible. And there's probably all sorts of opinions on like trying to even like have the counseling teams put students in specific teacher classrooms based on learning and preferentials on that, right? Like that would probably turn into a complete nightmare, but yeah. Like, gosh, that would be nice, right? Like if we could learn from the people we learn the best from, and if we could learn the content that we love the most and have the most interest in, right? Like we know that those are the places where we get the most growth and the most learning is when we have passion and excitement around these things. Like I think that would be a game changer for our personal growth. I think it would cause a lot of issues and hurdles as far as like trying to get that the diversity of knowledge. And so like it's great to have different teachers because you need to learn how to learn from different people. It's great to have different subjects because you need to know some of the basics of all these different parts. Mm-hmm. And like, as we, you know, everything in college basically is go from wide to very, very narrow, right? Like no longer are we getting good at a broad area. It's now let's hone in. And once we've graduated college, let's hone in even further into a master's. Let's hone in even further into a doctorate, right? Like mm-hmm. we start to know more and more about less and less as we specialize. It's interesting that we don't really do any specialization in high school.
Yeah, and like I think it's unique. As you were talking about that specialization thing, I was thinking about how like we keep talking about social media and how that impacts like how our kids feel different and or the same and things of that nature. Like kids do specialize on social media, right? Like they only hang out with the people, like to your point about the person who could live by themselves, right? They can find 400 affinity groups that are just about their thing, no matter how bizarre you and I might think it is, right? There are literally around the world, millions of other people who are into that same thing and have a Reddit thread about it or have a Facebook group about it or whatever. You know, I talk about coaches' Twitter all the time. Like my Twitter feed is like essentially nothing but football coaches and stuff about racial and social justice. So like you can find the things that you're into and just like specialize on those in that world. And you're right, like high school, and I think it's important. High school is a place where for the most part, that is not true. And so that's the tricky balance of creating a space where it's okay, where kids don't have to worry about looking stupid for being different, but also creating a space. It's not like you're creating a space where, hey, we all have everything in common. It's just like you're creating a space where it's like, it's okay for you to be in Star Wars. It's okay for you to be into anime. And it's okay for you to be into all things NBA, right? Like, and guess what? The kid who's into all things NBA doesn't have to be on the basketball team, right? They can just freaking like the NBA. They don't have to play basketball. Right. But like letting all of those different things pop up, but then also finding ways to bring all of them together so that they can find their shared humanity or whatever squishy term that we want to put on there. Like, I just think that that is what makes high school such a cool place to be, is that all of those things are in the same place and hopefully mixing together a little bit every once in a while.
Right. High school. Oh my gosh, high school is just so weird, right? Like the idea of doing that generalist idea, like learning mm-hmm. a bunch of stuff, then yes, specializing in some of my interests and finding my common groups. And a challenge for anybody who has not done this yet: whatever weird thing that makes you weird and unique, if you've not looked up a group on whatever weird thing it is, and you feel alone that like you're the only one doing it, look it up. You will find your group. It's mind blowing. So challenge there for you. It'll also make you a better resource for your students when they come up with like, nobody else in the world wants to go find this thing. And you're like, no, check this out. And you can like go find them their group and be like, look at all these people that are just like you.
What's funny is I've done that for a couple kids and they're like legitimately disappointed. I think there's like that. There's almost like a weird badge of honor, at least with some of the kids that I've run into, where it's like being able to claim that you're like you're one of one is right. Like a thing, right? Like that whole like the sarcasm around like everybody's a unique little snowflake kind of sarcasm. Right. Like, well, actually, you know, there's a million people right. who are into this thing that you're into.
Right.
I thought I was cool and different.
Well, and to go back to our even like just the basic human needs, right? Like that is the significance piece, right? Like we want to be unique. And when somebody's like unique to like a, I don't want to look stupid and I don't feel like I'm fitting in, it's good to give them the, you're not alone. But when somebody wants to be unique because I am the one, you're like, oh wait, I'm not the one. Like all of a sudden you just like crushed and deflated like that little like self of like pride. So yeah, again, like high school is just so weird. Like I had a student this week who was like, hey, can you go down and get me food from the cafeteria? And I was like, no, why? And they're like, well, I have lots of social anxiety and I don't want to go down to the cafeteria. And I was like, okay, tell me more. Well, I just get really anxious. I was like, what makes those anxious feelings come up? And it was like, well, people like are looking at me and they're saying things. I know they're talking about me. I was like, do you know they're talking about you or is that your story? Right. And so we just like all this stuff. And so eventually I ended up, I was like, tell you what, I'll go down with you. And so, like, eventually we went down, we got food. She was like, oh, that wasn't actually that bad. It was good, you know? And I was like, good, congratulations. Like, we celebrated, like, the accomplishment there of, like, I can walk through the cafeteria and not feel stupid or feel, you know, singled out because I'm just who I am. And we're all weird and we're all unique and we're all the same, right? Like, yep. All of that is true all at once. And that's the weirdest part of high school, as we kind of like stumble through the who am I. And we're going to stumble through that for at least another decade from high school on, you know, like, yeah. I mean, there's not a doubt in my mind that it took me until at least 30 to start to figure out who I was, right? And like, and again, like, it took me a really long time to figure out like who I wasn't, right? Started to help define who I was. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the addendum to yes and is both and, right? We're all of the above, right? Like, I think that's another thing that we all need to remember. I just, your story about the student in the cafeteria, I think one of the things about the fear of looking different, and, you know, for those of you who are teachers who are listening, you probably know this already, right? I feel like this is pretty widely accepted knowledge, but maybe if you're a parent out there who hasn't done the research, like, if your kid's pushing you away and only wanting to hang out with the kid that you wish they would never talk to again, that is completely developmentally appropriate for a teenager, right? Like, they are totally like looking inward. They are totally in a place where they do not want to have anything to do with authority figures in their lives, right? Like, and they are completely self-consumed, right? Like, they're legitimately, that is what their brain is doing. That is what their physiology is telling them to do. And so it makes perfect sense. This is the irony of being a teenager. It makes perfect sense for a teenager to think that when they walk through the cafeteria, everybody is looking at me and talking about me. But if you are walking through a group of teenagers, the least likely group to be looking at you and talking about you is a group of teenagers, right? Like, they could give zero flying Fs about what 99% of the rest of the world is doing. It's right. Astounding. And like, my favorite story for that is I used to have a group of students who I'd had. It was early on when I was at Canyon Park. I think it was like my third or fourth year teaching. I had a group of kids that I'd had in eighth grade the year before. And then I had them again in ninth grade. And I happened to be that year I coached the, I think it was the year I coached both the boys soccer team and the girls soccer team. So I just had, I had like this random crossover of kids that I was spending kind of a significant amount of time with. And even with all that, there was a part of me was like, oh, I'm like the, at least the adult in the building that's like the center of their universe, and not like in a weird way, but just like, and they would come to my into my room in the morning while I was trying to get ready for stuff. And they would just have like their hangout time in my room and they would talk about things. And it became very clear to me early on. I was like, oh, they completely forgot that I'm in here.
Right. You're their landing space, not their focus.
Yeah. They don't. Yeah, exactly. And there would be times when I would literally have to like roll my chair and be like, hey, Parker, I'm right here. I can hear you. And she, like, to her credit, she'd be like, oh, Jesus. Sorry, K-Dub. Yeah, I forgot you were in the room. Like,
right.
Yeah, it's my room.
Right. Right. Yeah. Totally oblivious. And so anyways. So
I mean, that's a middle school. I mean, they were ninth graders, but that was a middle school story, junior high story. But I mean, that idea of, like, they're looking for acceptance with their peers, but at the same time, right, they're so lost in themselves. Is such a, it's why high school is fun, and it's also why it's really hard both to teach and to be going through, to be honest with you. All right, folks, quick interruption as Tim gets ready to start story time. Wanted to remind you that on littlebiged.com you can find our teacher vault and all of the resources that are shared there. Last week we gave you some more connection activities around going fast and eliminating the need to be perfect. This week we're going to be putting in the connection activity from Tuesday that has the shield creation process so that you can do that activity at the beginning of next school year if you choose. So just a quick reminder, littlebiged.com is where you can find all that stuff. And now into Tim's story.
Right. Speaking of going through, we're going to jump into story time here to kind of wrap us up. But it just shows up in so many ways. And I'm going to share kind of my own personal story. and how it connects to some of the students that I've now taught and have been able to connect and share my story with, because it does. It shows up in different ways for the same person. Like I said, I was very quiet at home. I was very loud at school. And in math, I was great at math. So like I showed up as like, you know, your standard math nerd, you know, like, and I was like, I'm good at it. I'm proud of it. Like that was who I was there. That's who I thought I was supposed to be. In English, like I think I've shared this story before too. Like before I started doing meditation on a regular basis in my 30s, like my brain would be all over the place. I'd read two sentences, my brain would go to whatever that sentence was, my eyes would keep moving, I remembered absolutely nothing that I'd read. And so like I always felt really stupid in English because I would read for 8 minutes or whatever time they gave us. And one, I would never finish the passage in time. Two, I would never remember anything from the passage. I'm like, I read the first sentence and my brain went way off base. I was like, please don't pick me. Please don't pick me. Please don't pick me. Right. And so like, I had that fear of stupid all the time. And so that avoidance and that hiding and trying to make myself small so I wouldn't get called on, or, you know, just like for me, I started to become a little bit of a class clown. That was definitely in middle school. We've brought him up before, so I'll say his name again, but Brian Wood, one of our buddies, I remember I sat in the back of a class with him one time and neither of us had any idea what was going on in class. And instead of engaging, we just played like slug bug all the time, like to the point that we started like, hey dude, I saw 50 slug bugs yesterday on my drive home. And we just start like punching each other in the arm, like slug bug, slug bug, slug bug. And like our teacher's like, I don't even know what you guys are doing. We're like, you drive a pink slug bug, bam. And we'd like, you know, punch each other's arm again. And like we just basically became jokers because we didn't want to be found out that we don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And for me, the ironic part about that now as a teacher is I'm like, the whole class knew we didn't know what was going on. Like who are we fooling? Like, but in our teenage brain, we're trying to avoid that discomfort that we feel because we are so self-centered and we do anything we can. Right. So I focused a lot on what I was good at. I avoided what I wasn't good at. And in this avoidance happened in a lot of ways. One, it was, I would try to be funny and make people laugh because I thought if people laughed, I thought they loved me or they cared about me, right? There was a connection. And that was way better than them thinking that I didn't know what was going on. So they couldn't count on me and they thought less of me. So like, obviously the two, when you put them side by side, I'm picking jokester every single time. So that makes sense. And so when I see students do that, I connect with it. I'm like, yo, I get it. I've done it. Right? Let's go have a conversation. What don't you understand? Let's make sure next time, like we have a board, like a question on the board, I have an easy feeder for you so you can feel like you've contributed and you don't have to go to your comedy routine, right? Like own it. You're going to be hilarious for the rest of your life. I love that you've specialized this tool, but right now I also need you to know this tool, right? And so like being able to be vulnerable and share those experiences is great as a teacher now. The other one, which I think for me, just because I'm aware of it, I share my story and I connect with our youth service center like very closely on a lot of this conversation, is the other one that I think that gets overlooked a lot. And this is like addictions of any kind, whether it's our cell phones, which almost I would say 90, 95% of our students have at least a mild form of addiction to their cell phones. Like it's amazing how much my students will panic if I actually physically take their phone from them because they've refused to put it away numerous times. Right. Yeah. And it's like this removal of a limb. Right. And so like that, but the thing is like, we don't recognize that as an addiction. And it's like, no, if you take away somebody's drug of choice, they're going to have withdrawals and they're going to be like emotionally, like completely erratic and all over the place. And, and we're also like in a country and a world that to a certain degree accepts teen drinking. Beer is okay. Right. And for a lot of my students, like their parents almost provide it for them because they're like, oh, I want them to be able to drink at home so they're in a safe space. And yeah, if they have a couple of their friends over, it's okay because I know they're at home, right? And so, I mean, it's a pattern, it's a habit, and it becomes an addiction. And so like, they don't want to feel something, so they numb out. However that numbing out looks like, right? A lot of our country is legalizing weed. And so now all of a sudden, like, oh, it's not even alcohol. I'm just smoking pot. Like, it's totally fine, right? Mm-hmm. Like you've been stoned for the last 7 days. You have no idea what's going on. And you just keep going back to it and keep going back to it, because now you have anxiety because you don't feel comfortable in your own skin when you're sober. And like, you know, it's an addiction. And like, we're just not having those conversations. So for me and my story, like, I didn't drink in high school. Like, for the most, I think it was like senior year late, because me and one of our other buddies, we were both going to Wazoo, and we're like, we should probably learn how to like drink and party, because we're going to a really big party school, you know. But because we were in football and we, you know, signed the code of conduct, we had a coach that was very adamant about the do right rule and like being men of our words, and like, you put your name on a paper, be true to it. Like, I just didn't. And so, but when I got to college, like, man, I learned how, you know. And I wanted to fit in so badly. I didn't want to look stupid. I didn't know anybody. Like, I was in a brand new atmosphere. I was in a fraternity that I literally knew nobody. And that was like part of my intentional decision, was I wanted to like rebrand myself, right? Like, I wanted something new. I wanted where people didn't know me, that I could be who I wanted to be, because I felt like I've shown up as how people expected me to be for so long, and I'm still trying to figure out who I am, you know. And what was, you know, interesting about that is I literally showed up exactly how I thought those, you know, that new group wanted me to be. And so then I just went from being one character to another character, and I just kept playing the parts of other people's movies. And I buried all of that with drinking, right? Like, I would go to the party, and I would get myself into a state where I didn't really care about what anybody would think about me. I never felt stupid anymore, because I was the life of the party, and it's what people expected. And now, instead of coming up short, like, I literally was meeting people's expectations, which was a success, you know? So like, I know some of my students are doing the same thing, and they don't even understand it yet, but I'll have them all of a sudden finally like say something like, is that who you really want to be? And like, depending on the time of year and stuff, like, I will actually have these honest conversations and share like my drinking experience and how I was like avoiding things and how like it eventually ended up like wrecking my life, right? Like, you and I are best friends, and I drove you out of my life for like probably 3 years. And I mean, we picked back up once I finally figured my crap out, right? And it, you know, because of who we are and the connections we built early, like, we were able to recover from that. But like, I stopped getting invited to like people's weddings because I was a train wreck, including yours, you know. like I was a train wreck at your wedding, and like, that played into like other things. And you know, it's one of those where we just don't address it until it's such a big problem that we don't know how to address it. And I wish that we would have more conversations early about the avoidance and how many different ways it shows up, especially in things that are addicting, whether it's drugs, alcohol, you know, you name it, pornography, technology, you know, anything that we can really just overindulge in, overeating, like those things, like where we're eating our feelings, all that kind of stuff, and how that can show up in very unhealthy routes. Like, I wish we had more of those conversations early so that we were comfortable having conversations and not being like, oh, I'm the one weirdo that doesn't have his stuff together yet, and so I'm going to show up the way I want you, the way I think you want me to show up. So, I mean, that's a kind of an abbreviated version of my story. But like, I love at this point in my teaching career, being able to have those experiences and being 5.5 years sober and having a completely different life that I've built and am designing around who I actually want to be, and like having the courage to finally be like, no, that's actually not who I am. I'm not going to do that. Here's who I want to be. Check this out. Come along with me, you know, and like being able to have those real hard conversations with students that don't think that's even possible yet because they've never seen somebody else do that. So I don't know. There's kind of my story.
I don't want to step too hard on your story, but I do want to quickly just acknowledge, like, thank you for sharing that. I know that that's not an easy thing to share out, and I think it's important for people to hear about it. The other thing that I want to point out to people about your story is how even someone, whether it was me, who, again, we were very close, your parents, your other friends that you were close with, like, we didn't know what was the driving force behind the behavior, right? And so, again, coming back to that idea of showing up for your students and just understanding that there's a very good chance that nobody else knows, and maybe they don't even know why they're doing the thing that they're doing, and that it's connected to a fear of looking different or a fear of looking stupid. And yeah, so I appreciate you sharing that. I know that it's not a fun thing probably for you to talk about, but I also think that it has a lot of power for people who hear about it. So thanks for sharing, man.
You're welcome. And I love that you brought up the why part of that, because that is so critical, right? All of our behaviors are driven because of some desired outcome. And a lot of times we don't know why we're doing things, yet most of us are creatures of habit. Even when we're in, you know, addictive behaviors, a lot of those are patterns. And so if somebody really took the time to pull back and look probably from like a third party view, like somebody that wasn't close and part of the life experience with me, they probably would have been able to go, oh, every single time this happens, he does this. And so as teachers, if we're able to see the pattern, even if the student doesn't know why they're doing whatever the pattern is, I think we can help them see the pattern and at least have the conversation and bring up hey, have you ever noticed that this seems to be happening? And again, don't like call them out, right? And like assume that you know what is real, but like, you know, I might not have any idea what's going on here, but my hallucination is that every single time a classwork assignment is due and you haven't done it yet, you put your headphones in, you totally disengage, and you check out for a day. Have you noticed that, you know, when you haven't done your work and then you disappear for another day, that usually compounds your distance of learning? And, you know, and then you can have that conversation. Oh, I guess I haven't really noticed that. You're like, well, I just didn't do my work, so I didn't want to, like, you know, whatever, 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 right? They'll put their reason in there for you if you've built that space for them. So yeah, I love that idea of, can you sit back and identify the why? Because there's usually a pattern to all of our behaviors. So anyways, love you guys. Thanks for hanging out and listening. And we'll see you back here next week. Always learn in a peak state.
Make it a great day.